pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice. Good morning and welcome to the fourth episode this season. Today's episode is called Ready for Anything, Fitness, Nutrition, and Prepping. Don't forget to share your thoughts and ideas with us. Just email us at podteam@theconstitutioncommandos.org. We're going to get this thing started without any further ado. I'm your host, Chris Williams, and my brother Patrick is your co-host. And you're listening to The Constitution Commandos.
Getting into shape may just sound like a couple of guys talking about you need to buff up and get Arnold Schwarzenegger and everything. That's not the case. Because one of the things that I discovered when I went into boot camp, and I was already pretty physically active because I own my own roofing company. But one of the things I discovered in boot camp was that exercise, that eating right, exercising daily, and what have you. My memory, it was already good. But man, did my memory get exponentially better.
Oh, absolutely. The mental focus comes along with physical fitness.
It absolutely does. And a good diet. I'm not a nutritionist. And
we don't even play one on TV.
That's right. But a lot of these things that we talk about individually, they all work hand in hand. And knowing what's going on around you, knowing what you have, what can be used against you or what you can use, and being physically fit. All of this stuff, it goes hand in hand. You really can't have one without the other. I don't know how you can. Somebody might could tell me how you can, but I don't know how you can.
Now, they all work together.
I believe they do. And I think they're all as important as the next individual thing we might talk about. And don't just do one thing and not the other, because they do work together. And if your own personal safety means anything to you at all, then you'll put it to practice, right? It's about as simple as it gets.
And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that a go bag is important, regardless your situation. Go bag is important. Now, what he's talking about on physical fitness and how these things work together, if you have a go bag, and I'm not saying your go bag should weigh standard military kit, general packing list weighs about 35 pounds. And your go bag for 72 hours, it's don't just leave it sitting by. Put it on your back. Go walking. I don't care if you got hike and bike trails. I don't care if you have a park. I don't care if you don't, you got a neighborhood.
Just walk around the block.
That you can walk. Yeah. I personally, yeah. And push yourself a little further. If you make the block one day, then make the block and then a smaller block the next day. Or make the same block. And if you can't make it a full second time, then backtrack the way you came and end your ruck. And when I say ruck, like we called it ruck marching, we threw a bag on our back and we went for 12 miles. So I'm trying personally, due to my experience, my knowledge, and what I prefer to carry in my bag, I'm probably going to be in the 40-pound, 45-pound range for my go bag. Now, I used to go with 175, 180 pounds in my ruck.
You don't have to brag.
Believe me, that's the reason I'm out of the military, because I'm just kidding. But it also cost me my chance to go Special Forces.
And bear in mind, that was coming out of an airplane with that kind of weight, so it's not bragging.
Yeah, and moving with a scout unit, which was comprised of about six people counting the scout leader, our team leader. Anyway, they moved fast, and I moved just as fast as they did, but with a lot more weight. And get out there and carry it, because if it ever does happen that you cannot successfully defend your home or where you are, because remember, number one mission set in any bad situation, preservation of life. I cannot say it enough. Preservation of life. Your life and everybody's life that's in that house. Preservation of life. Property means nothing. If you have to get that go bag, then you need to be able to walk So get that go bag. Go and hike and get some buddies. Yeah, get some buddies. Go walk with it. Hell, I used to live in one of the coolest places in the world, which is
Austin, Texas.
Yeah, and look, I used to live on my bicycle, and I was an active son of a gun. I would ride all over the place on my bicycle. Man, I'd be riding or whatever I was doing. I'd go to a restaurant, and then when I got done, I'd be active some more. Whatever calories I took in, I burned off within a couple miles. So if you ruck it, I mean, there ain't many restaurants that say you can't come in there with a bag. Hey, if you go rucking and you decide you want to stop and get you something to eat, bust up in a restaurant. You and your buddies go in there and grab something to eat. When you get done eating, hey, head out of there. It doesn't matter. And carry the weight. Get used to carrying the weight. And part of a go bag.
Oh, and by the way, just to interject, you don't really necessarily have to carry a bag. You carry the bag by all means. Get used to it being on your back. But there are ankle weights. You can wear wrist weights. You can. There's all kinds of substitutes you can use. Just get used to carrying the weight.
Yeah, and that is the way you can start off. But thing about the bag is, when you put a bag on your back, the weight distribution and where the weight lays on your body is totally different. Now, ankle weights will not hurt by any means. If you don't have a bag and you don't have one that's a 72-hour bag, I wouldn't discourage anything to start getting you built up. But you got
right. I don't consider that would be a viable substitute.
Substitute.
That's what I said. But I think it would help in the sense that you would get used to having the weight on you. But like you said, the bag on your back is not the same thing as having wrist weights or ankle weights. It feels different. You're going to wear differently. But if you don't have one, put some kind of weight on you.
And if you do get a bag, try your hardest to fit it to your body. Some people are tall. Some people are my height, around 5'10", which I don't know if I'm short or just average. Just average. But and some people are shorter. So the bag that I would wear that would properly fit my body wouldn't be the exact same bag my wife would wear because she's only 4'11". So get a bag that fits your body because that right there is going to help preserve your physical nature. You won't hurt yourself as bad. Little things like that are important to keep in mind when you decide to get a bag that's going to serve as your 72-hour bag or a go bag. But yeah, throw it on your back. Get used to walking with it. And if you have to embrace the suck and you don't know how to embrace when it's raining outside, keep rucking, keep walking with it on your back when it's raining. You know what? Rain sucks, but you won't be able to choose the weather that you have to leave if you have to leave your home. So if you have to leave your home and it's storming outside, I'd be willing to bet that if it's an indefensible position and it's raining, the idea of it raining is not going to stop you from trying to preserve life. If you have to go, you have to go. So just get used to it now.
Hey, that's not a bad idea because a lot of people, how many times have you heard, oh, I'm going to melt if I get out in the rain? I tell people all the time, I was in the Navy. I trained in this kind of weather. You know what I'm saying? Look, if it came down to a muddy swamp, a lot of people would look at that and say, man, look at all the insects you can catch right there. Now, man, get in the water, go, right? That's where you would be. So if you can think of anything uncomfortable, challenge yourself to attack that uncomfortable. That's a real good way to go, believe it or not.
Yeah, and another thing that is just as important, probably, okay, actually, I'm going to go back a little bit. More important. Well, it's a close equal, but it's probably more important. Okay. People do not think about your feet. Okay.
No, I'm telling you right now, carry extra socks, carry foot pads.
But get a quality pair of shoes. In my opinion, I would say a pair of, just me. I like tactical boots. I like tactical boots for a lot of reasons. They're full lace. I can provide more support for my ankles. There's typically a tactical boot, not all of them. But a lot of tactical boots come with a very good aggressive sole that allows for multiple types of terrain and weather conditions. I prefer tactical boots, but hiking boots work. Yeah, hiking boots work as well. But
I prefer my boots over my tennis shoes. My tennis shoes are quite comfortable. But if I had to hit rough terrain or I had to hit a lot of elevation changes, the boots all day long.
Absolutely. And do not buy a new pair, especially if they're leather, and think you're going to go the first time you bought them and go rucking with it. You will destroy your feet. Break your shoes in. Yeah. If they're real leather, soak them in water, put them on until they're dry. And your feet will stretch them out. Do not take them off. They will shrink smaller than your foot size, and you're really going to play hell with your feet back in them.
Your feet don't just stretch them out. They will, like you say, when they dry out, they do shrink, but they will form to your feet. They will be yours.
Yes.
They'll be part of you then.
So break in whatever shoes you have so you do not deal with bad blistering or any problems that would be accrued to your feet that will prevent you from moving.
Keep yourself out of your medical bag.
Unless you're the only one.
The more you use the medical supplies, the less you have to use later on. And when things get really bad, you don't know really how long you're going to go without medical supplies. So you want to try to prepare for not using it. That's the idea. So
a general rule to remember, it goes along with what he just said, is one is none. Two is one. So if you have a go bag and you put a medical kit in there, don't go to your go bag if you cut your finger. You need to have an additional medical kit in your house that you use. Leave the supplies in your go bag alone. Do not touch it.
You can if you want to, but when you have to have it, you'll remember this conversation.
One equals a zero. Two equals one. Always your level of redundancy on supplies, period. If you have a go bag and you have a bug out bag, don't buy one compass. Leave it in one bag or the other. Have each bag loaded out with a compass. So
now that's one thing I have done, and I know you and I've talked about this before, but one thing I have done is I've taken into consideration that I've got Laura, you've got Salida. I don't believe that Laura can carry as much as I can, but does that mean that she'll be less effective? No. She's not going to move as fast as me, but does that mean she's going to be more dangerous? No. But at the same time, if I'm not making things equitable for her to be able to do what we need to do, then now we're done. But I think I told you the other day, I got two compasses. I got one for my bag, one for hers. Now, I'm going to have to learn how to use this compass. I've never used one of these, but I will learn how, and I'll teach her how. I have certain medical stuff split up for her bag and my bag. She'll learn how to use what I know how to use anyway, and that'll be beneficial for her and for me. But the idea is, I hate to say word to the one that's least trained or least knowledgeable, but in order to have survival at the greatest level, in some ways that's what you got to do. But everybody needs to be able to train for the unexpected. Always be ready for the unexpected. That's not to say that everybody's going to be all special forces, gung-ho, and all this. But everybody needs to be trained to a certain degree to be prepared for whatever might come, whatever that may be.
That's correct.
I tell you what, let's get back to, let's do a Q&A thing, if you don't mind. Because if you just think about being in the place where you live, there are just so many things that should be taken into consideration. And there are a lot of things that maybe, I don't know, I guess the average person wouldn't think about, but let's just say, let's go with the the conspiracy theory, if you will. Let's just say that the MP drops on us in 48 hours. What does the individual or family living inside a home, whether it be apartment or house, what things would be the top things you would consider or would you think a family needs to consider in that situation?
In an EMP situation, in my opinion, things we spoke about earlier would be first and foremost, because you're going to have a societal breakdown. So your environment being of the utmost importance, because if you live in an urban environment or inner city, probably want to do everything you can within the first probably 24 to 48 hours to get out of the city. Because any and everything in the city, it will be up for grabs. Your stuff, your neighbor's stuff, everybody's stuff.
Now, bear in mind, the EMP, for those who don't know, is an electromagnetic pulse. And what it's going to do, and what that will do is, if this bomb, which some countries already have this capability, if they drop one over the United States, they'll put us in the dark. And when I say in the dark, all electricity, water power, vehicles, everything goes completely dead within a frame of about 48 hours, if I understand correctly.
It's an EMP. Once it goes off, if you right. don't have shielded electronics, if it
which
has
something
a
we
board
can get into.
It, if it has a board in it, your telephone, your computer, anything electric, your car, if you have a brand new car, even an old car, it can fry the battery.
Right.
Faraday cages are things to have, or Faraday bags. Those will preserve electronics. Now,
let's base it on the assumption that nobody has it. And I'm sure there are some who do, but let's just say nobody has that. An EMP comes over to the United States, let's say tomorrow. You got 48 hours. Actually, the grid will be dead in about, the grid will be dead in less than an hour. But people won't realize it for about 24 to 48 hours. So let's go with that. Just inside the dwelling.
Okay, if you're in an urban environment, I'm going to answer this from multiple different ways, actually, because I live more in a suburb, whereas people that live in urban. If you live in a city, you get out of that city. And I would say on the outside, 48 hours. By the time people realize what happened, everything is subject for the taking.
Chaos. It's all
pure chaos. The absolute worst of humanity will be visibly witnessed by people that have never imagined. It'll be horrific.
Now, you said you are a suburb. You're in a suburb of Jackson, Mississippi, and I happen to be in Jackson. Now, your plan of attack may be a lot different than mine. As a matter of fact, I would expect it to be, because I am in Jackson. And
yes,
so,
but you're not downtown anymore.
It doesn't matter. I'm in South Afghanistan now. But the point is, if the lights go out, I'm just going to tell you, I don't care if it's just Jackson. I'm going to treat it as though an EMP just got launched and I'm bugging out. We are leaving, okay? Because I feel, and this is just the way I feel, because I know the people around here, people are going to go crazy in about 6 hours.
Yeah.
I give it 6. Now, you're in a suburb of Jackson, but honestly, Pearl's a lot better than what Jackson is. Let's go with that, because I am in the city. I will not be staying here, not for any length of time.
But, and once again, we're talking the EMP scenario. Once again, this is why it is vitally important for everybody to stock up on food and water and have a go bag. It's vitally important because, regardless, if that happens, you're going to have to get out of there. So for me, in a suburb, if an EMP goes off, chances are my vehicle is dead, and I'm going to be depending on whatever mode of transportation that I have, which I do have a bicycle, so I can cover more ground quickly. But if I have to leave my home, if I already... Okay, let me go back, and I don't mean to jump around and confuse people.
I saw that in your face. You look like you was thinking about something you could have already Dog, go ahead.
When we spoke earlier about getting to know your neighbors.
Yeah.
An EMP in an urban environment, even if you know your neighbors, is still probably not a good idea to stay there. For me in a suburb, knowing my neighbors might buy me an additional amount of time. But guaranteed, the people of the urban environment, I live just outside of the city. It will not take them long to get to where I live.
That's what I was supposed to say. You are sitting so close to the edge of where I am.
Yeah.
Your time frame is not much different from mine, but you are in a better place in regards to being in the suburb.
Now, once again, this BMP scenario.
Right.
Is why I say my property is undefensible position because of how many avenues of approach that are available to somebody to get into my property
right.
or into my home. Now, if I know my community, let's just say I do know almost everybody in my neighborhood, and let's say that they are all equally protected and they're all equal believers in the Second Amendment, and we have a way of watching out for each other, then that will buy us more time.
Actually, but that'll buy you a lot of time.
I
say a lot. Most people would think that's not a lot of time, but if it can buy you an extra 2 to 4 hours, 2 to 12 hours,
absolutely.
The way we think, that's a lot of time.
Absolutely. But in my mind, the things that I'm looking at, if an EMP goes off, if you look outside and roads become completely congested with dead vehicles, they're not moving, you have to ask yourself, they didn't all run out of gas.
No, we get the planes falling out of the sky.
Oh, absolutely. So for me, that would allow me a little extra time to gather things out of my home that I have already collected for a bad event. So I would be able to collect my go bag. I would be able to collect the supplies necessary, being firearms, munitions, and I would be able to collect my daughter, my son-in-law, grandbabies, my son-in-law's mother.
Yes, sir.
And we would have a plan, already have a plan to our next location. Where are we going? We will move to that location. Now, in that situation, I'm going to do everything I can to avoid any avenue of approach to anywhere. Roads. I will avoid roads like the plague. I will avoid them because everybody else, sooner than later, will understand bad things have happened. And they might see me with a pack and say, I want what he has because it might help them survive. So I'm going to avoid the roads. I need to become invisible to people at that moment. And you don't know. It could be somebody that you work with that you think would be cool and watch your back. But if they have a family and they are thirsty or they are starving,
oh, they don't have your back.
They don't have your back at all.
And that
you are a target.
And you and I have talked about this on many occasions. And I've said it, you said it. When it comes down to it, when the shit hits the fan, I'm going to have a rally point. That rally point will be designated for those whom I've already spoken to, who I already trust. And when the shit hits the fan, it's going to be this simple. When I make it to my rally point, friend, family, foe, I don't care who you are, if you hadn't already had this prearranged deal, sorry.
What?
You made a mistake approaching my area. That's it. And I hate to be like that. I don't want to be like that. But unless you know what somebody is capable of when it comes to survival, trust me, it is not good.
And you don't know what they're capable of.
You're not. That's it. You don't. And I hate, like I said, I hate to be like that. Friend, family, or foe, if you encroach the area that I have claimed or that I have lit upon, and you show up without announcement, look, within the first 9 months, don't do it, please. Because I'd hate to put somebody down because they didn't make that previous arrangement.
Are going to be to break contact. That would be my mission set, would be to break contact regardless. If I've already fled and somebody stumbles upon me, I'm going to do everything I can to avoid engaging.
That's the idea. Want to engage. For sure. And neither do I. And again, it goes back to the way people act when they get desperate. Look, when we came back from Texas to go to Katrina relief down on the coast, I think we heard about it right as we were coming through Jackson. Some guy killed his sister over a bag of ice. And this is what people resort to when things get really difficult. So this is why I say community is so vitally important right now.
Because you'll have each other's back. Like I said, don't get political with them. Don't care about politics. You want to ask questions that will establish some type of a baseline and make it clear to you what type of person are they. Are they the type of person that will be, before it becomes a desperate situation, take advantage of people? Or do you think they will be the type of person that in a tough situation would be more apt to watch your back and assist you? You have to be able to establish these things when you're developing a sense of community, because humans are the most vicious animal that walks the planet and the most unpredictable.
And the reason for that is because of all of the animals on the planet, we are the most intelligent, which means we have the ability to devise, reason, consider,
and execute. Whatever.
And execute, yes. And that's, people are by far the most dangerous animals on the planet. That makes it imperative for you to know your fellow human, simply put.
In the EMP situation, I've already, you need to take stock of how many rounds do you have? What types of firearms do you have? What types of defense? I have a million knives. This is an example. Later, if I wind up running into people that intend me no harm and they honestly are trying to do the same thing and survive and they have something that I want and they don't have a knife, I can trade with a knife. Always have things that are barter. Packs of cigarettes. Anything that you can use to barter, okay? Because you're not going to have everything. But I'm going to get back to the munitions. Know how many rounds, depending on the weapons you got, how many rounds for each weapon. I can go through a small example. I have firearms and I have pellet rifles. I've got slingshots and I've got takedown recurve bows. More of a primitive bow and arrow as opposed to a crossbow. Now, I have, my firearms will be utilized for defense purposes only. Because the first things that are going to be stolen out of the stores will be weapons and bullets. You're not going to be able to get them. They're going to be gone.
And don't forget food.
And food. But I'm just saying means to provide. Those things will be gone before you need them.
I guarantee you within the first 24 hours of an EMP, everything's looted.
Yeah.
And the stores will be looted, so your house will be next. And I know you're not doing this, Patrick, but I'm not saying this to scare anybody, but it is to prepare you, because these events will take place and it's only a matter of time. None of this is to put anybody on a level of fear just to be scaring you. That's the job of Wes Craven and Stephen King. That's not what we're doing. Just be prepared for it.
Yeah, but I would strongly urge people to get into primitive weapons. I have a high-powered pellet rifle. I can draw small game with and not have an issue.
Small game, you can draw pigs with that thing.
I could probably drop a person if I have proper placement. But the only thing about that is that it's actually louder than a 22 long rifle.
Sounds like one if you're in the right place.
Yeah, but it's actually louder than a 22 long rifle without a can on it. So that makes me refigure a little bit. But take note of what you got. Then you need to take note of, okay, what is going to be the hardest things to replace? And what is going to be the most desired thing for defense of your life? Remember, preservation of life. I can't say that enough. Preservation of life. If that you think at some point, if you think at some point you might have to use a firearm to defend yourself, then that firearm should be the absolute last thing you use to go hunt deer or anything like
that. That is correct.
That's what makes primitive weapons ideal. A bow and arrow, a crossbow, a slingshot. Get these.
And by the way, a musket is considered a primitive weapon, but
it is, but then you're going to have issue with being able to acquire black powder at a later date. So you're still going to be looking at primitive in nature. I can whittle some arrows. I'm thinking about getting a crossbow. I can make some bolts for a crossbow. They're not called arrows. They're called bolts. I can make bows.
That's correct.
If I run out of arrows or I run out of bolts, I can get down in the woods and get me some straight, whether it be bamboo or some limbs, and pull out one of my mini pocket knives or knives, and I can whittle me some bolts. So I will
whichever one you
have,
did not give to your granddaughter.
Correct. I will always have a level of weaponry for defense and to provide food. Now, I will say my firearms, it would be defense weapons in case I had to defend myself. I can rain hail on a small group of people if I'm in the woods with an AR. I've got no doubt in my mind that an average Joe, I could rain hail on 10 to 15 people a wooded environment with an AR.
Well, that concludes today's episode, and we appreciate you listening in. And more than that, we love getting your input about our discussion, so drop us an email at podteam@theconstitutioncommandos.org and check out our merch at tccusa.store. Hey, keep your eyes open and your head on swivel till next time. I'm Chris Williams, and on behalf of my brother and myself, we are the Constitution Commandos.
Or
signing off.